Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Today it's February 21st, 2012. Congratulations to Patrick Martins and Ann Saxway. They got married last week in Florida. I know Jack Inslee was down there, and he's got a tan. And our friends up here in New York, congratulations to Ann and Patrick. Well, this is, all right, woo! Oh, yeah. And thanks to our sponsors, greatbrewers.com. Check out greatbrewers.com to learn more about beer. They've got Beer Cloud. They've got a special test, Great Brewers 20 and 100 tests. You should definitely taste it. Take the test and write into us, and we'd like to talk more about it. Well, this is quite a show. It's a show I'm going to have to go to my notes on because we got some cool guests. We got Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger.
Hey, Jimmy.
Jen Swartman from Blind Tiger.
Hi.
Caleb Stratton, a sustainability expert. And Kai Olson Sawyer, a blogger and water research specialist. So today, for the first time, we're going to get pretty deep in the world of beer. You know, the building blocks of beer are water,
hops,
grain,
yep,
flavorings. Mm-hmm. And I think this is going to be our
yeast.
Water.
Don't forget yeast.
Water is the basis of beer show. Why is that so important, Kai? We met a couple of years ago. Tell everyone how you met me and what your interests are.
So, what I do is I do water research and also water energy research and how those two kind of connect in a nexus. But what we did about 3 or 4 years ago was called Take Back the Tap. And so we were trying to promote water infrastructure, tap water, as opposed to bottled water, which was really like starting to proliferate at that time. And so Jimmy's number 43 was involved in that, and so it was really cool, and definitely, you know, the backlash against bottled water has started to work. So you know, it's one of those things that's near and dear to my heart, and I have to say beer is probably one of those things that people don't think about so much with regards to water, but you know, that's like the body of beer essentially.
Dave, you've come across this is an important issue because New York State's facing fracking, you know, this underground drilling for gas. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about that today. The subtitle of our show, my notes say, How Beer Can Save the World. And
or at least the water.
Yeah.
That's right. Hopefully.
So let's talk. Dave, you said you talked to Phil Lionheart at Omegang.
Yeah, he was down on the 25th, and he brought it up himself. He's like really nervous about the hydrofracking that's going on up in his area. And actually, when you go up to the, you know, Cooperstown for the Omegang Fest, which you go to in the summers now, you see signs for it all on everybody's yards, and but he's like, if anything gets in our water, we're out of business. And so obviously brewers you know, would be very nervous about anything that's going to ruin their water supply, because there's no way, once it's in there, you can't really get it out, not to the point where they can really use the water.
Hey, man. Jen, what were you going to say?
Oh, well, of course it's going to affect brewers and beer, but of course water is essential even in its
raw
form.
It'll affect their customers, too.
I mean, it's going to, yeah, the customer base might suffer. So that's never good. It's terrifying, actually.
I mean, water's crazy. It's, I mean, there's places like, what, in England, there's Burton-on-Trent, there's places where water influences style of beer. I made a beer a couple weeks ago with a bunch of guys, as Beer Sessions Radio, for Beer for Beasts at Six Point. And we had this cool guy, Jason Bummel, who's been a guest on the show. He's from 49th State Brewing in Alaska. And he was there helping to make a beer. We made the Ray Dieter tribute beer, which is a London-style brown ale. And the first thing he said is, you know, you have to adjust the water. So he worked with the Six Point guys and talked to them about changing some minerals and salts in the water.
Sure.
And usually in New York, because our water's so good, the brewers don't talk about that, but he said up in Alaska, to create a proper pH balance, he has to add minerals or change something in the water in order to make beer. And it's, it made me realize that, wow, we're pretty lucky in New York if the brewers can actually just take water from the tap and make their beer that way. I don't know if there's any other discussion about
this. Yeah, and I think that, you know, most of the great brewers that are brewing a lot of different things are constantly, whether they have great water, you know, they always have great water to start with, but they're constantly manipulating their water to get, you know, the exact style that they want to do.
Some styles, you know, in order to get those flavor profiles, they, you know, traditionally were relying upon really soft water or really hard water. And so fortunately, we can simulate that. And brewers have been doing that for a while. But you've got to have a good base product that's free from toxins and things.
And it's usually one or the other. It's either high in pH or you know, or it's harder. And they know what they have. But the ones that are really good really understand water. They know exactly what they need to do to make that beer really come out perfect.
So what's your favorite beer from the weekend, Dave? Talking about...
Well, Jen and I were really... I started on Saturday... And yeah, on Saturday I started up at Hill Farmstead, and he did a release of Mimosa and Damon. Mimosa being a barrel-aged beer that mimics a mimosa, and then Damon was his imperial stout. But then,
so you were basically suffering before you even got to
before
me,
I got
yeah.
here. And then Sunday we had Roger from Triple Rock brought in his Roger's Last Stand, a triple IPA, 12.5. It was so smooth.
Roger Davis, right?
Roger
yes.
Davis,
from Oakland, California, right?
Right.
Yeah, and he was brewing for Triple Rock and Drake's before that, and just quit that job because he and his wife are going to start their own brewery called Faction. So they came to get... actually, Scott Vaccaro from Captain Lawrence's brewery that he's outgrown because he's getting ready to expand and is working on that. So he sold off his old brewery to these guys, and they came out to dismantle it and get it ready for shipping. So it's pretty exciting anyway. But then this beer happened to be the very last beer that Roger brewed when he was at Triple Rock. And it's called Roger's Last Stand, but it was a triple IPA that honestly was 12% alcohol. He sent it to a lab, and that was like verified. And it, well, the way he put it, and he was right, it drinks like an 8%. It was incredible. Really,
yeah, it was really
good beer. So we had that. And then Dave broke out some pretty nice bottles that he's been stashing.
Yeah, an 05 Cantillon aged in cognac barrels. It was like a magic marker label that they had dropped off when they visited. And then the Wadesda from De La Zen, which was...
De La Zen, Cantillon collaboration.
Yeah, they'd just been sitting around.
And it's been sitting around, but man, it has not
good.
Suffered. So yeah, that was fun. Fun drinking this weekend. How about you, Jimmy?
Well, I actually was hanging out with your friend Roger Davis as well.
Uh-huh.
And it's coming back to me, what we talked about. But he was sitting there. He's an older guy, with a big guy with a beard, and his other friend was his contractor buddy.
He's not an old guy.
Well, old compared to, you know, some of us, but.
It's not as old as
Let
you.
Let me start over.
Okay, go ahead.
But Roger, so it was cool that he was. He said he came out here to dismantle the old Captain Lawrence Brewery, and he was your friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I stayed with him for 3 hours. I think Thursday night, and
yeah.
I drank the 6-point the new Mad Scientist Berliner Weiss.
Ich bin kein,
which kept me going because I could at 3.5%. That's a session beer. I'm a big fan of it because I stayed up for late hours and I woke up the next day
feeling good.
Yeah, so that's my vote. But Roger, I want to hear more about this guy. He was going to be on the show, and so I'm trying to steer the show.
They left town
him.
Early because they got the job done. He came out with his general contractor, who's actually also in the bar beer world in the Bay Area, a guy named Jesse. And so they came out together to get the job done, and it ended up going really, really smoothly. And they were able to fly back on Monday because they're really busy people trying to get this brewery up and going. So unfortunately, they didn't make it to the studio. We tried to get him in here, but we'll hear more about them as they get going. They have not secured a space yet. They're hopeful about a couple options, but nothing signed. So, you know, keep your fingers crossed for them. But he's a talented guy. They're going to do a really
so Roger
great
Davis,
job.
Roger Davis.
Oakland, California.
Yeah.
Let's say a few more things about him, because I was struck by how he had a lot of integrity. He seems to represent a lot of what craft beer world is about right now, where he said a couple years ago he ran into Scott Vaccaro at GABF, and even then they discussed that when Scott expanded, he needed to do something with his old system.
Well, and there's a link, too, between the West Coast and the East Coast, because Jeff O'Neill, Chief, who was with Ithaca, who's now at Peekskill, he used to brew with those guys in the Bay Area. And so then when he moved out, now that he knows everybody out here, including Scott, so there's been this camaraderie. In fact, there's been some collaborative things that have happened over the years, you know, visiting each other.
Because now Jeff is in Scott's backyard. You know, he switched from Ithaca to Peekskill Brewing Company and doing a huge project there, 15-barrel system, and they've bought a building, and they're just going to completely redo it. And so Jeff was with Roger on Sunday, you know, when we were trying all these things. So,
we got to hear updates from a lot of really
interesting
people
of cool
who have
stuff.
Some fun, exciting projects going on, and can't wait to hear more and drink more.
Jen, how did you ever get hooked up with Roger Davis? And tell us more about him, because
I don't know.
He's
how
got a cool story,
happen.
Man. I want to hear about this guy.
No, I really, at CBC last year in San Francisco, Dave and I were hanging out at the Toronado, and there were a lot of people from a lot of breweries. And Roger and his wife Claudia are really dynamic folks. And so they were, you know, we all just ended up chatting together. And then
Toronado was closing down. It was that late.
We were closing the bar together. We were all kicked out together.
San Francisco, how late is that?
I don't even remember.
2 a.m.
That's closing time.
Yeah,
there.
It's closing time. So, so I made the contact with them then, and then they showed up at the bar at the Blind Tiger, and we recognized each other, and now I'm in contact with them since I go back to San Francisco on a regular basis.
Meeting this guy, it was like this cool epiphany. It's like, wow, this guy knows me. He's friends with Jen. He's, you know, from
it's
Bay
the beer
Area.
World. It's really small,
and he
pulls
talks
us
about
all together.
The breweries he's worked at. I've never heard of any of them. So tell us of the breweries that he's worked at.
You know what? I can't tell you his whole history. I do know that Drake's was part of that, and I'm pretty sure Drake's and Triple Rock are connected, I think. I can't remember the whole history. But Triple Rock's in Berkeley, I'm pretty sure.
Berkeley, yep.
Berkeley. And it's been around and has a good reputation. And so there. And then Claudia has been with 21st Amendment. And I'm not sure if she's still there, you know, but they both are from the beer world, and they're both really cool people. And I have faith that their project's going to be a huge success.
That's one of the reasons they're being careful about where they put the brewery, because they're good friends with most of the brewers
Everybody.
In that area, and they don't want to step on any toes. And
But I think there's room for more, you know.
Well, in terms of what we're talking about tonight, like water and, you know, environment. Do you think the West Coast guys are ahead of the East Coast in terms of thinking about pure water and pure ingredients, or do you think all the good craft brewers are on the same page right now?
I don't, you know, I can't say that I've talked to a lot of breweries about their sustainability and these issues out there. I do know, I mean, I talk about Sierra Nevada all the time, and it's a huge brewery that is incredibly green and is every single day, you know, there. Ken Grossman is thinking of new ways to try to tighten it up and reuse the resources. I mean, they encapsulate the CO2 off of fermentation, clean it, and then use it to pump the beer in the pub. You know, they've got like, it's just, I'm sure there's a little puff of steam coming off of something, and I'm sure it kind of drives him crazy that anything's just escaping.
He's going to fix that.
He's going to fix that and find a way to use that and bring it back in. And it's really, I mean, it's remarkable. They have a huge composting system. I can't tell you, it's huge. It's like this big worm, and you put everything in at one end, and they put all the, any of the scraps from the restaurant are pulled, everything is put in that thing, and in a couple weeks it works its way through the system and comes out as, you know, fertilizer for all the, you know, crops that they're growing, because they're growing malt and they're growing, you know, their hops, and they're using all that. So it's really, I mean, it's remarkable. 10,000 solar panels at least on top of their roof.
Like all over the parking lot. And on the East Coast, I know that Bill Kovaleski of Victory Beer, I mean, you know, they're going through major expansion. They're probably going to, you know, at some point move the brewery to continue to grow it, but they don't want to leave their water source. That Headwaters Pale Ale they make, they call it that for a reason. That's their water. And so it's a huge deal to them, you know, and they're not going to leave that watershed To go somewhere else.
It would change the whole profile of their beer, I guess.
Of everything that they do.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really good example of you know, I think most, you know, most breweries that have found great water, they're never gonna leave it. It is what determines, you know, their signature flavor.
Hey, Kai, one reason you're on the show tonight, Kai Olson Sawyer, is that you've been writing about beer and brewing better economies with American craft beer. What's your thing? You know, what's going on?
So, essentially, I wrote a post, I think it was late last year, and what I was trying to do was take what everyone knows as local food and local food production and consumption, and take something that people don't necessarily think about but are already doing with craft brewing and craft beer drinking, for that matter, and just trying to show that there are connections. You know, it's a consumer product. A lot of times you're drinking your beer with your food, so it's a natural fit that, you know, the way the ingredients that you're producing, the way you produce it, whether it's, you know, electricity generation, even the kind of sense of place or community that comes about with brewing and being part of that community comes out as kind of like local. And so I was just trying to make that connection. I think it's something that the brewers are already doing, and I just wanted to highlight that and say, you know what, maybe there's more that could be done in the brewing industry, particularly the craft brewing industry, because, you know, basically the people just outside your door coming by to hang out every night are the locals, and, you know, it's a local product. It only makes sense.
And how about this? if you're explaining to the average consumer the scope of a brewery's water footprint, what would be the most surprising or most not considered use of water from product creation to its ultimate consumption? Serious question.
All right. I would say that...
That's very serious for
you. Yeah, definitely. You know what it is? The big water footprint are the crops that go into it. So actually, the big water footprint is the grain, whatever kind of grain they use, barley, you know, wheat, whatever. But really, that's where the majority of the water footprint comes in. Although, obviously, you know, there's millions of gallons, barrels of water going into it. The actual production, the water that goes into growing whatever the field crop is, takes a, you know, huge amount of water. And further, just this is really interesting. It's about 17, almost 1,800 gallons of water that goes into a pound of beef. So the reason why is because, again, the water that goes into the grain is fed to the cow. And so they're essentially embodying, they have a bunch of water in them. And so when you get that, you know, slice of beef, that cut of beef, you're actually consuming a lot of water. So same thing goes with beer, that there's a lot of water embedded inside that beer.
Not just in the beer itself.
No.
So what's better use of water, beer making or beef making?
Oh, beer making, no doubt.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
So just eat a little beef and drink a lot of beer.
Yeah, you know, everything in moderation is what I say.
All right. Except beer.
Except beer, yeah.
Hell yeah. All right, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back talking more about how beer can save the world on Beer Sessions Radio.
Are we gonna do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just like old Bandit Run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal, son, never mind them brakes. Let it all hang out, cause we got a run to make. The boys are thirsty in Atlanta, and there's beer in Texarkana, and we'll bring it back no matter what it takes. Eastbound and down, loaded up and trucking. Are we gonna do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old Bandit Run. We'll be right back.
welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Here we are at Roberta's in Bushwick in Brooklyn. We're having a great time. We're looking forward to pizza and a steak for two after the show. But Dave Broderick's here from Vermont. Dave, before the show, you said to me that there's not good beer in Vermont. Is that true?
No. Well, you took that out of context. Now, I said that in a lot of the local stores up there, it's tough to find. Down in New York City, we just have, you go into a grocery store and there's a huge array of beers. And up in Vermont, it's just not that way. The co-ops are pretty good, but that's about it. And so it's a little bit tougher to, you got to drive a long way, 45 minutes to get good beer in your local store. And so it just makes it a little bit tougher. Though I will say, this is totally an aside. I played in my first winter volleyball tournament up in Vermont this weekend.
Outdoor beach volleyball?
Yeah, there was. Yeah.
And who was involved that we might know?
Well, there was Patrick Dakin, who's the former brewer at Jasper Murdoch's, and then the farmer Gio, who we raised all that money for, was at That's his right. farm.
They're
his
the farm, ones who invited me. I remember that.
And they got wiped out from Hurricane Irene, and so we had this volleyball tournament out in his field that's covered in silt. From the hurricane, and it was supposed to be covered in snow, so it's.
I was going to ask that next.
It's a nice. Instead, it was a mud bowl. Climate change on winter volleyball it's a terrible thing. But we had a good time and drank a lot of Whistling Pig from Jasper Murdoch, which was nice.
Wow, where's Jasper Murdoch making beer?
It's in Norwich, Vermont. Not too far. The tournament was in South Royalton. It was South Royalton against the World. I had to play for the World since I'm not from South Royalton. And the World always loses. It's Spanish rules volleyball. Okay.
And we won't ask.
Well, which means the rules
Naked
change.
Outdoor winter volleyball.
The rules change every play. You never know what's going to happen. But you just know you're going to lose.
So the average package store, what do they call it in Vermont? Are they package stores or convenience stores? Where can you buy beer in Vermont?
You can buy it you can buy it at co-ops there is a beer store now not too far from where I live, but again it's always kind of 8 or 9 different beers and that's about it. Lagunitas just came in, but I haven't really seen them in Vermont yet except at like one of the bigger co-ops. So yeah, no, you really got to pretty much drive.
But then you guys have this great beer culture too.
Right. But those guys aren't, most of them aren't bottling. And so you have to go to the brewery or go to a bar that serves them. But again, if you want to drink at your house, there's not much, you can do. So we do a lot of blending.
In terms of like environmental, awareness for the brewers and use of water, what's the climate like up there?
You mean what? Well, the water's.
I don't know all these things. Environment, water.
Right.
Know,
the water's amazing.
Think about this.
But obviously, it varies. Like sometimes it's really hard. Sometimes it's not that hard. So you really gotta definitely pay attention to it. But it's super clean. My farm water's coming up from 250 feet down. A lot of the guys have deep wells, and so it's like very old, very clean water. That's what you're hoping for. But, and they're obviously all very aware of the environment. They're very aware of their wastewater. Vermont has a lot of rules about that. A lot of these farmstead breweries have to, go through a big process to get approved, that mostly deals with water and wastewater. So it's definitely a big deal up there. They take it very seriously, more seriously than probably New Hampshire.
Do you think, like at Hill Farms, do they measure how much water they'll use and how much water waste goes out?
I don't know if he measures it, but he definitely pays attention to it. I mean, he knows what his well can do in terms of water supply. And I think that I would guess that that's a limiting factor in terms of his growth. He's not on a municipal supply. So that, that really... His brewery is going to conform to what his land can do and can provide water-wise.
I remember when Wandering Star, they were trying to open their first place in Western Massachusetts. And in one of the towns, there was an issue. They were really being estimate how much water they would use, but not only take in, but also put out in terms of waste. And Kai, are these the kind of things that you have to talk about or study?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing is, it's very interesting to talk about limited supply because Vermont is a water-rich state, right? I mean, it must be like 40-plus inches of rain
exactly
per year or snow melt, whatever. But the fact is that even in water-rich places, you have to be concerned with the amount of water that you withdraw, whether it's from surface water, you know, streams, lakes, whatever, or groundwater. So the fact is, it can never be out of your mind. And if you're doing things right, it has to be, regardless of your business, it needs to be something that you consider and that you're doing something about. Because just because things are nice and easy now doesn't mean with, let's say, climate change, it's going to necessarily be like that, you know, down the road. So planning, making sure that you understand your environment and really making things as efficient as possible just makes sense.
All right, man. Hey, let's bring in Caleb Stratton here, who's trying to create a let's say what you're trying to create. It's like a green
rating system.
Rating system for breweries.
We've talked about all the things that I want to capitalize on tonight. You talked about materials and agriculture and energy and water, and all the breweries are really taking amazing steps, I think, and are at the forefront of sustainable initiatives. You have Sierra Nevada producing its own agriculture and really be able to take advantage of monitoring what they're consuming as a brewery. But CRISP, which is Craft Responsibility and Sustainable Practices, looks at the whole system. What I'd really like to do is capitalize on all the initiatives that the breweries are doing across the nation. We obviously start locally, but create a repository and get some kind of industry collaboration.
Well, Caleb, tell us how people can reach you, because you're trying to reach out to the Brewers Association of the United States. You're trying to talk to New York State Brewers Association. You want to reach out to people, and people have to spend time and money to create a green brewing standard. So what are the steps that you would do to make this happen, and how can people contact you?
Well, my email address is cstratton.peak@gmail.com, and currently undertaking my master's in sustainability, and that's really what helped me segue into understanding how these processes work. Ideally, it would be working with New York State first. There's 60 breweries in New York State, and I need brewer buy-in. I can't try and make some kind of rating system that people aren't going to use or understand. So first thing is, well, I reached out to people like Jimmy. He has the Good Beer Seal, and that recognizes different bars in New York City that are supporting craft brewing. And craft brewers are largely doing this independent of some kind of larger system. So if we can get a group of 60 people in New York State, we can start with that. Or even right in New York City, you start with Empire Brewing, who uses renewable energy, at Brooklyn Brewery, who's using renewable energy, and start to talk to these people about how can we help the brewers that aren't using their resources efficiently, and how can we really recognize the brewers that are doing that. And that's where the rating system comes in. You're certifying that as a consumer you can buy a CRISP beer or whatever, and as a producer you also know that you're getting different levels of efficiency as you kind of look at all the resources you're using.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a great idea, and you know, there are a lot of people that are in craft beer that are paying attention to this, and so you know, they can promote it themselves, but sometimes it's better if a second party sort of says, no, yeah, they're really doing it, you know, who really sort of examines the whole thing and comes up with some kind of process, you know, just like leads and things like that, that really rate these things rather than just kind of, you know, blowing their own horn or whatever.
So, Kai, do you think that some use of water, and somehow water could be brought into this green rating?
Yeah, totally. I think that there's so many different systems, let's say, that go into it, you know, whether it's the systems of water, energy, like agricultural production, whatever. I think Caleb is really onto something. I think that this has legs. It's just whether the breweries will take it, whether there's that buy-in. I mean, it's kind of interesting because I think we're right at that point, and Caleb was mentioning this before. It's like, you know, are they ready to do it? Because a lot of them are already doing that. Just can they just take that final step to say we're not necessarily in competition with each other, not just for the actual, you know, brewing, but also for the sustainability.
The reason Caleb's here is, I don't know, about a month ago he came to me and said he had this idea for creating a green rating system for breweries. And he knew that we had done this thing called Shoot Town to Brewtown last summer at shoottowntobrewtown.com. And that was like a loose collective, but there was a green scientist, a green architect. People actually talked about what it would be like to go into an old industrial town and create breweries or craft brewing industries. And I know that he's gone on and connected with them and talked to them. And I really think you're onto something. And I think that as consumers, we would like to know if a brewery has some type of green practices, but also to inform us. I mean, Jen has a lot of experience.
Well, I was going to ask Caleb also if Crisp is going to offer, you know, resources to breweries too, to who are trying to get on board but don't even know where to start, and, you know, like get them moving in the right direction.
Well, ideally, you have. Well, let's say New York State, for example, you have all the best practices. So it's really a repository where if you can't attain certification, we can provide you with the tools to increase your energy efficiency, to increase your water efficiency. And hopefully, yes, it becomes a tool that the entire industry can use to really self-sustain. Well, sustainability is a buzzword, but that's why we're trying to quantify it right now, even though it's really about quality.
Yeah, I think that's one of the easiest ways to get them to buy in is if you, almost outline all the things that they can do and really make it easy for them. And so it's like one-stop shopping. They're like, okay, here's all the information I need to know.
Here's the checklist.
Yeah, here's the checklist. And here are the things you can do. And you can do it, okay, here's if you have a low-budget brewery, you know, you're very small, here's some things you can do. If you're a little bit larger, and you could just keep amping up, until you get to Sierra and New Belgium.
So Sierra Nevada is really, Jen, you must know this, and Dave, of the well-known breweries that we work with, what are the top ones in terms of being like?
Sierra Nevada and New Belgium,
Sets them apart from everyone else?
Well, the thing is, I mean, clearly Sierra Nevada, is huge and successful and it has resources. But it also is so huge and its production is so large that in order to, to really like keep such a huge system green is also a task because it is massive. But it's, I think that Ken and the whole, Ken is at the forefront of it, but he's had a vision to make his brewery as green as possible. But he's such a thinker who can think outside the box.
I mean, he's a former engineer.
He's a former engineer. Like, he's like, yeah, he's a really smart guy. And so I think that he on his own can come up with a vision of how he's going to do this. But I think that it probably is overwhelming for a lot of little guys who are just trying, they want to do things right. They're making good beer, their business is doing okay, and they'd like to be as green as possible, but then that's just another whole set of things to think about.
Manufacturing is such an expensive process to begin with, and then if you add on the green component, it's tough, especially when they're just starting out and they're just trying to like buy fermenters, which are ridiculously expensive, or enlarge their brew house. So it's like, it has to be a process.
Much to the disbelief of some people when they see that craft beer is on the rise and, ooh, it's successful and these businesses are doing well, people don't realize that brewers don't make a lot of money. This is a passionate industry, and you can, there are some guys who've done really well over the years, but you don't go into the business with that in mind. And a lot of these guys really just want to make their beer, do it the way they want to do it. They want to, make their customers happy, and they want to be able to just make a living to be able to pay, to keep their family going and to, be successful on this small scale. So it's not like there's a whole lot of money flying around in this industry all the time to be thrown at big, expensive, overhaul plans. So I'm sure it is daunting for a lot of guys.
Yeah, I mean, doing things like capturing CO2 and some of the things that you need to do to be really green, or certainly energy, getting that water up to temperature is very energy intensive. So it's not cheap to be do that in a green way. So
and maybe some things like getting more local malt and hops and things, you know, might be part of that.
Certainly helps
for the smaller guys, you know.
With CRISP, I think that we're trying to efficiently allocate resources where, primarily from the producer end of it, I'm looking to make it cheaper for brewers to produce an excellent quality product. So there's three pillars, though. It's not just about creating a cheaper product, but also creating an environmentally sensitive product. And then, which we really haven't talked a lot about tonight, but the creation of social equity. There is a culture around craft brewing. It's palpable, and I really think that by combining those three things, it's not necessarily about just financial or just environmental, but you have to look at the total system, and that's why sustainability is really about enriching all those things. And it's encouraging to see what the brewers have done on their own. So it's not just about is this too expensive for me to do as a startup? People are doing this. They're really doing it with no other incentive besides the fact that it's the right thing to do.
And I think that's really why it's so amazing to be, where we're at right now, because it just is going to take a little bit more. You're already doing some of it, so why not, once you have a standardized form essentially to check off, why don't you just take further steps? Now, you might not do it in the next year. It might be over a 5-year you have a plan, but a part of any good business is to plan things out, look ahead, have a vision for the future. And so it just makes sense. If sustainability is a buzzword, I totally agree. But sustaining oneself means that you want to live for the future. You want to continue in the best possible way for the future.
And one more thing. Come on.
And I guess that's the second facet of this, where it is a ranking system, it is a certification system, but a tool will also be provided where they'll ask you, what's your policy, what's your management practice, and what are the goals you have to attain? And it really allows brewers to look from year to year in a number of different areas, really an indicator to say, are we gaining momentum, and how can we track our progress so we can continue to attain and move forward and really keep pushing sustainable practices within our industry.
All right. We're going to keep this conversation going. We'll take a short break. We'll be back on Beer Sessions Radio.
Girls are pretty. Have my dinner at the diner, spend the night at the wheel. Gotta keep rolling, doesn't matter how I feel. If you're gonna miss me, it's a doggone pity. Beer tastes better and the girls are pretty. Stacking up the miles as you roll across the land. Gotta keep growing, man, you gotta understand. The tires on the road and the engine sound like music to me. Well, I gotta keep a rolling, keep a traveling on. When tomorrow comes, you know that I'll be gone. If you're gonna miss me, it's a doggone pity, 'cause the beer tastes better and the girls are pretty.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com, to our supporter, GoodBrewSeal.com, and our special sponsor this week. There's the New York Craft Beer Fest happening March 3rd at the Armory. Check it out, NewYorkCraftBeerFest.com. We have a special person here. Ross is a regular from Jimmy's Number 43. Ross, what are some of the other beer bars you hang out at in New York City?
Against the Grain.
Okay.
And
that's two.
So Ross just showed up at Roberta's today to say hi. We brought him on, but he's been at Jimmy's Number 43 for many years. Yep. You have a question for our panel tonight. What would you like to ask?
So we discussed earlier a lot about hard and soft water, and I'm intrigued to know the different minerals that are in hard versus soft water and what flavors they impart to different beers.
Wow, good question.
Kai?
I have to admit, I'm not really familiar with the flavors, but, it's interesting to me. I defer on this because I'm not really sure.
Yeah. Okay. anybody could correct me out there, but I think hard and soft are just references to the level of mineral content, mm-hmm. and it probably what those minerals are then becomes specific to different parts of the world and different types of water, and you know, so. But I know that things like certain styles, like Pilsner, are traditionally really soft water, where they were, I guess, you know, the Czech Republic, where they were in parts of Germany, they must have had really low mineral content water that they were using. And so when you make a Pilsner, I know you don't add very much of anything to it most of the time, and you probably would have a hard time making it if you had super high mineral content in your natural water source that you were using.
And IPAs are traditionally hard water.
Yeah, so and I think stouts also have pretty high and mineral content. Yeah. Hard water.
And then, but the other important thing is, you know, pH versus acidity. And that's like another component of water that's really important to styles.
I mean, the interesting thing is you can play with all of these. You can treat it to whatever level you want. But I think, you know, what most people are going for is finding that water supply that suits their style. Or maybe you tailor the style around the water supply. So in either way, it's kind of interesting. One interesting thing that I read recently was thinking about essentially like the place that you're from and how the water makes a difference with the beer. But the thing is, what if you took water from one place and, you know, had, you know, essentially hops from another, but made combinations that you never thought possible? So, I mean, I think it's already happening.
Happening, but I think it's interesting because you look at, like, what I was saying about Pilsners, I think that those styles of beer were designed around what they can make with the water source. I mean, yeah, they made terroir. They ended up designing beer styles around what they could make from that water. And if the water was really high in minerals, then they had to design styles that worked with those mineral components, because they didn't have the science to be able to adjust the water or even test the water. So they were just sort of going with what they could brew. And those regional styles from Europe in particular, you know, if you went back and you studied what the water was in each of those regions, I bet that would lead you to understand where they got those, how they designed those
and
beers.
And then ways they would change the mineral quality would be like, if you're making an oyster stout, you actually put in oysters and oyster shells.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
That's also changing the mineral content, right?
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, essentially, you put adjuncts in a beer to make something different, but, you know, there's better or worse adjuncts, I guess. There's essentially different flavors you can impart that, again, play with the water you have on hand. But I think there's even more that we can do without, like, necessarily treating the water, you know, with regards to brewing.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if, I mean, breweries haven't really, I mean, they all say that we have, like, special water, but they don't really play up necessarily what that water is good for in terms of brewing. And it'll be interesting if you know, winemakers always play up their terroir and what it sort of leads to in their wines. It'll be interesting to see if, you know, water is the thing for brewing, because the grain usually comes from somewhere else. The hops often come from somewhere
else. Maybe that's really the direction, Caleb, for your, you know, green brewery initiative. And maybe it's not just the equipment they have and the amount of money they can spend, but maybe it comes down to the opposite. Maybe it's like, you know what, there are these local qualities about a place and that make beer like the water, and if they're making grains and hops locally, you know, maybe in the northeast of the United States, people say that rye grows really easily, and some of the malters like Valley Malt in Massachusetts say that rye is an easier grain to malt. You know, maybe certain regions do have complete unique, you know, characteristics that we're not even aware of yet.
And
maybe
that's
where you want to steer the Green Brewery Initiative, and not just recognizing some of the bigger breweries that already do it.
Well, the regional context of resource sensitivity is absolutely a part of the rating system. And in the Southwest, you're definitely going to focus on water conservation, where in the Northeast, you're going to look at resource conservation, because you don't have necessarily the same access to the same products. This isn't a system that you're going to unilaterally say, this is a sustainable product. It's really going to focus on different levels of, are you sourcing national products? Are you sourcing regional products? Are you sourcing local products? And how are you using the local elements to produce your product in a way that really represents your specific area? Because craft brewing is very I guess the word is independent, and they want to be specific, and they want to be recognized for different flavors, and that's an important element, a critical element of what Crisp is looking to recognize. Definitely.
Dave, you're up in Vermont a lot. You're buddies with Hill Farmstead. I mean, is there anything that they're doing besides being small? I mean, small is also a way to be green. If you're a really small brewer, you don't really impact much other than our taste buds. And we like small breweries. But what are they doing anything specific to, you know, to set a standard for themselves in Vermont?
I mean, he just, you know, his family's been on that property for 225 years. So he's very conscious of, you know, how he's working with that land. I mean, his whole dream has always been to be able to be on that farm, you know, where he grew up, where his family's always been, and to be able to make a living there. And he wanted to do that brewing. And so, yeah, I think everything he does, he thinks about, you know, that farm and how it'll be impacted and if it's the right thing for that. So he's definitely, it's funny. He was just saying that he went down to, and this is a little bit off of it, but not really. He went down to the Extreme Beer Fest, you know, the Beer Advocate event in Boston. And he, you know, he doesn't go to a lot of festivals, but he went and he was showcasing some of his beers. And a bunch of people came, you know, and he heard this comment a few times. It was like, of people saying, wow, I was really looking for a beer that would melt my face off. And he heard that phrase like a number of times. And he's like, you know, that's not what I'm about. You know, this beer is an expression of who I am and who my land is and, you know, my farm is. And so it's, you know, he just kind of was like, I just don't know if those are the things I really want to get involved in anymore.
Maybe that's a Boston-centric term because I've never heard that. And no one's coming to the Blind Tiger. Yeah. No matter how high an ABV they're looking for, I've never had anyone say, quote unquote, that they wanted their face melted off.
Yeah,
I'm going to be listening for that now.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
I don't think I've heard that either. But I think it's more just that idea of I was looking for to get blown out of my shoes or just something along those lines, something that was like, but I think we're kind of moving away, a little bit away from that and more towards that idea of
quality.
Of quality and you know, this goes back to the water thing of, you know, what does the land bring, and water is obviously a huge part of it, to the beer. Mm-hmm. And really letting that come through. I mean, this is like a huge thing in wine, biodynamics, and it's all about not jacking up the sugar content and just producing these huge wines. Instead, you know, really letting the minerals come through, those flavor profiles of a piece of land. And I beer is definitely going that way too, and you know, you can really see that, and the people that are really into it kind of know. It's like I go, you know, to this part of the country for a certain kind of thing, certain flavor profile, and this country, you know, this part of the country for something else. So I think you're going to see that more and more, and water's a huge part of it.
Yeah, I think that there's a refinement that's, you know, we'll say since the late 80s, early 90s, craft brewing really started to take off. And it just, you know, started to snowball over time. So there comes a point where maybe your face doesn't melt off because there's only so many hops you can put in before you don't want to drink it. So, you know, there's just a point where you want something that tastes delicious.
Kai, you've written a lot about water, and now you're writing about water and beer. How can people find you? Do you have a website?
Yeah, you can go to, I guess you could go to h2oconserve.org. And you can just check out, one thing we have is a water footprint calculator. Ecocentricblog.org is our blog. There's a lot of cool stuff on the blog. We have a hydraulic fracturing series talking about how you know, it's really a big deal that's going on in New York and the rest of the U.S.
Great. And Jenna, what beer are we drinking right now?
We're actually drinking a beer that I brought back in my suitcase from Portland, Oregon over the summer. And I came across it and was like, we should be drinking that now. I didn't mean to sit on it so long.
Have a refill, please.
I know, it's gone.
Oh,
sorry,
no,
Jimmy.
What's next?
It was really good.
And
it was actually a collaboration between Deschutes and Boulevard, the Conflux Series number 2.
It's excellent. And before that, Caleb, what did you bring us?
Mary's Maple from Brooklyn Brewery. It's just local brew in New York City. It's outstanding, and I think we all agreed it was pretty tasty.
Very good.
Yeah. So, Jen, what are we going to drink as we close out?
Well, that's I nice. Did bring a little Russian River.
Let's do it. Come on.
All right.
Which one did you bring us?
I brought the Temptation. It's the one in Chardonnay barrels. Since Dave was so kind to like share his Cantillon the other day, even though a week from today I'm going to be at Cantillon Brewing. So I have Cantillon in my near future.
So I know you're going to bring something back for us.
Yeah. So that luggage is going to be heavy.
You have a cool trip planned.
Yeah, I'm doing what I'm calling Jen's Sour and Smoke Tour of Europe. It's just me. I'm going by myself, and I'm going to Brussels and to Bamberg. And so the spontaneous fermentation of Brussels and the rock beers of Bamberg. And I will come back and tell lots of stories. Don't you worry.
So we have a question for the panel from the greatbrewers.com, the good beer test. I'm just going to ask the question. You guys give me the answers this time. The following step in the brewing process can serve as a source of renewable energy. So what steps in the brewery process would serve as sources of renewable energy? Kai Olson Method.
Let's see.
Kai Olson Sawyer.
Actually where I would start?
Kai Olson Sawyer.
Yeah, that's right. It's always been a plague of my life, but I love the name anyway. I would say energy efficiency. That's where no one looks to start. Instead of necessarily having to create something new, there's a lot of things you can do to just kind of cut back on energy itself. So, you know, maybe it's just turning certain things off at a time you need. Figuring out ways to just reduce the amount of electricity you're using when you don't have to.
All right, and Caleb, what would you say are some steps for the brewing process that can serve as sources of sustainable energy?
Sources of sustainable energy. We can do the recirculation of steam and boiling process. The biggest thing is mash, right? The spent grain. That serves as a huge tool for local farmers to reprocess that. And I actually think that's the best one because you're diverting organic waste from current waste streams.
And that's one where I don't know of a single brewery that does not find a farmer to take their grain to. That's one thing that I think
do that.
They all do it.
That's cool. We were up at Six Point a couple weeks ago, and when we made the Beer for Beast beer, yeah, they had a farmer pick it up. Arcadian Farms upstate, and feeds his animals.
Yeah, I really have as yet to find a brewery that dumps that spent grain.
Yeah, I'm going to start raising pigs this year and on my farm up in Vermont. And luckily, there's a small brewery that's hopefully going to start up in Patrick's Brewery in May.
Who's that, Dave? Can you tell us more info?
It's Freight House Brewing Company. It's supposed to Patrick's doing it, and we actually he was going to do a brew pub, and he has decided not to do that, and we're actually going to take over his pub space and put in a little pub there in South Royalton, Vermont. But I'm going to be taking his grain. He doesn't know this yet, but I'm going to be taking his grain up to my pigs. But apparently you got to start them on the grain right from the get-go. They won't. If you give them fresh grain, like that hasn't gone through the brewing process, and they get used to that, they won't eat spent grain. So you got to start them on that.
All right. So the secrets of the trade.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm sure I'll learn a lot more. These are my first livestock.
No, these are the cool parts of the whole brewing process, you know, working with your spent grain. I was in Amsterdam once, and there's a cool old brewery in downtown Amsterdam, the IJ, the brewery T-I-J or something. And they send their spent grain to a farmer nearby who raises sheep. And he sends back these wheels of this beautiful sheep's milk cheese. Nice. So if you have specific examples of food that's made from spent grain, that's awesome. We want to know about it. I want to eat it. He's got something here. He's got a pig that he's raising.
Right? It's not a pig. I just thought of this. But, you know, pigs are dirty animals, so to speak, right? Well, New Belgium Brewery is doing their waste to energy, actually, where they're taking their organic waste, and they actually are producing energy from that. It's a direct source of, you know, taking the spent or the methane, the decomposition process. You're harnessing that, and it's natural gas. It's really that simple. So it's not pigs, but it's very similar to what we're talking about.
All right. Well, hey, we're going to do a little closeout. Let's give a shout-out to the New York City American Craft Beer Festival on March 3rd at the Lexington Avenue Armory. There'll be over 150 beers from 75 breweries. there'll be some special sessions. One's led by industry personality Sam Merritt of Civilization of Beer, who's a good friend of Beer Sessions Radio, and also Josh Bernstein, author of Brood Awakening. They'll be giving special seminars. There's a chocolate and beer pairing that we're programming with Clay Gordon. And as well as Adam Levy is going to preview his New York International Beer Competition winners. So we'll be there March 3rd. Check out NewYorkCityCraftBeerFest.com for more details. And tune into Beer Sessions Radio in February. We'll be talking a lot more about these things. That's now. Apocalypse is February 25th. Go to GetRealNY.com. It's one of the latest Get Real events. If you haven't been, check them out. GetRealNY.com. They're doing a lot of beer events, too. And come hang out with women in the beer industry at Taproom 307. Sonia Jacoby from Kelso and Haley Jensen and Tap Craft Beer Events co-owner Emily Garland. They were on our show last month. It's a really cool event. NYCWomenInBeer.eventbrite.com. So, in closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at GreatBrewers.com, who've helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Brew Seal, GoodBrewSeal.com. Thanks to Jen, Dave, Kai, and Caleb for joining me, and Ross, our Jimmy's number 43 customer on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee back from Florida, Bree O'Connor, and guest coordinator Brett Thompson. We'll see you next week on Beer Sessions Radio.
It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. She's sipping vermouth. Cool. When I yell at